Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It is Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 3:30 news, Nancy Gomez, Executive Director for Project Onward, is going to join us to talk about that organization and about their fundraiser, which is coming up as well. And we will have another edition of pop-up video. Plus, we're going to, you know, we're leading into Super Bowl weekend, so we're going to talk about the best football movies ever made, and maybe something you can watch leading into the Super Bowl if you're getting ready for some football. But right now, it's time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk about TV, and there's lots to talk about. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
How is your recovery?
Oh, it's in its early stages. It turns out that you can't recover from 24 straight days of exhaustion and minimal sleep in only a day or two, unfortunately.
Right. Well, tell everybody, you know, because the last time you were here, it was right after the TCA tour, and then right before you went to Sundance. So you've been a busy guy. Tell everybody what's been happening.
Yeah, it was 24 straight days of wearing a badge and basically each day starting at 8 a.m. and going until 9, 10, 11, 12, early in the morning, et cetera. In Sundance, I think I averaged around 4 or 4.5 hours of sleep over the 9 or 10 days I was there, but I was out seeing movies and then seeing Sundance's new indie episodic program, which was sort of like TV, but not exactly. And it was really a lot of fun. It was an exhausting 24 days between the press tour and Sundance, but I would not do anything differently. It was a great opportunity to see all the different ways that TV is being made and exhibited and celebrated differently, and also to mix things up geographically, and also to get a little bit cold, because you people in Chicago, you don't necessarily appreciate how wonderful it is to have this steady winter weather that you have, and what you need to do is get away so that you only have it for, say, 5 or 6 or 7 days a year, and then you'll really appreciate it.
Right. No? Yeah, no, that's not going to work here, Dan.
I thought I had a really good pitch there.
Especially, you know, now that it's just the beginning of February, we've still got about 3.5 months of this stuff to go. So, let me ask you, you said, you know, obviously I want to talk about the TV stuff that you saw at Sundance for sure, but you saw some movies. Did you happen to see Hereditary?
I did not. Lots of my colleagues did, and they all say it's terrifying. There seems to be some consensus on it. I'm a little bit worried about sort of the overhyping of the Sundance horror film, which sometimes those movies can't live up to. I'm still ticked off about Blair Witch Project, which I know some people loved and just made me angry and nauseous.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, all the hype in the world couldn't make the Babadook any less scary for me, so
yeah.
I hope this one is more like Babadook and less like Blair Witch.
Yeah, I happen to be on the positive side of Blair Witch, Dan. I love that movie, and also, you know, the Witch debuted at Sundance too and got a lot of hype behind it, and that one lived up to the hype.
It did, and I feel like it's probably about 50-50, honestly, on which of the horror movies from Sundance, the movies that air in the midnight section, come and play on the mainland, as it were.
Yeah.
This is one that there was a lot of consensus on, and I'm looking forward to seeing it when it comes out. I think summer.
June.
I think June.
Yeah, June. It comes out in June. A24, of course, picked it up because, of course, A24 picked it up. So
why not?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the TV stuff that you saw in Sundance. I'm really interested in The Trade, which is Showtime's new documentary series from the guy who directed Cartel Land, and I don't know how this guy's still alive. I mean, just like, you know, the movies that he makes, I don't know, how many times has this guy been shot at? You know,
I don't know. It's my problem with him as well, honestly, is that I can't separate my brain from the why is this happening in front of the camera, why is this happening kind of feeling, which
yeah.
I get the sense you feel as well.
Yeah, yeah. I was just a wreck watching Cartel Land, especially. I was just like, what is this? And crazy.
I don't understand why people do the things they do in front of his camera. And it's obviously a sign of quality documentary filmmaking, is to get the people to trust you enough that the drug kingpins are willing to just sort of discuss chopping people's heads off in front of the camera. And yeah. And you think, boy, you really probably don't want to be saying this. You know that this is on the record, right? And apparently they don't care.
Yeah.
So tell me
about The Trade. Yeah.
The Trade is basically, the easiest way to think about it is that it's Traffic as a documentary film. That's just the simplest way of looking at it, because basically it's looking at the opioid epidemic from basically the supply, the trade, and the consumer point of view, and showing all of the different stages from the poppy fields in Mexico to border crossing and the INS agents unable to stop it there, into Ohio, which apparently is one of the nation's leading sites for opioid epidemic deaths, and showing how law enforcement there are struggling to make any kind of headway, and how every time they think they've stopped one flow of heroin or something worse coming through, the next one comes through from another side of the state. And then also showing the victims, basically the consumers, and they go to Atlanta, where there are a couple people who are, you know, basically they're junkies, they're addicts, they're struggling with addiction, and showing the toll it takes on their lives, but also the toll it takes on their families, and basically just the circle of it all, and how you think you've recovered, you think you've stopped the addiction, you think you've stopped the border flow, and every single time you think you stop, there's another channel coming through. And it's really harrowing, it's really thrilling at times, and again, you just sit there constantly agog at the things that people are doing in front of the camera, whether it's addicts in Atlanta just, you know, getting their next fix right in front of the camera. They are so unable to control their actions that even knowing that they're in front of cameras with the potential of being on national TV, they can't stop themselves. But again, you have this sicario in Mexico, this assassin who's talking about the first guy he killed and how he chopped off his head. And it's unreal to watch these things happening in front of the camera. And I find myself sometimes getting a little distracted by the access that the director here, Matthew Heineman, gets. I just don't know how he does it, but never do I get so distracted that I'm not entirely locked into the horrors that are unfolding. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking for it. It's going to be on Showtime. When is it? When are they going to air it?
It shows on Friday. Premieres on Friday, February 2nd. So this one's quick. This one's coming out right now.
All right, great. So tomorrow, outstanding. That's good. I'll get the DVR all ready for that. And speaking of DVRs, we have to catch up on what you're doing with your DVR, Dan, in a little bit.
Oh, God. It's a nightmare. I will be happy to take any of your advice, though I've watched some of the shows that I know that you watch, but I've got so many more to get through. The weekend is going to be a nightmare.
Okay, well, we'll try and prioritize at some point. Okay, another Sundance thing that you saw at Sundance, and this, of course, has some interest for us from Chicago here, because Steve James made it, and it's called America to Me, and it's a docuseries that's coming to Stars. Tell me that Steve James does not disappoint.
Oh, no. Steve James does not disappoint. You do not need to worry about that. And this was sort of a nice bit of serendipity. Steve James, who had never been nominated for the documentary Oscar before, he'd been nominated for editing on Hoop Dreams, but never for the documentary Oscar. He'd been snubbed repeatedly. It was basically a travesty. Earned his first documentary filmmaking Oscar nomination on the morning that the fourth and fifth episodes of America to Me premiered at Sundance. So everyone got to cheer for him, and you know, Steve James is a good enough guy that you can sit there and happily cheer for him getting some recognition.
Absolutely.
That frankly he deserves.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
He should have multiple Oscars by now already.
Agreed.
So,
agreed. Yeah.
Agreed. So, yeah. So, American to Me, it is a 10-part series. It is going to air on Starz. Starz acquired it, I think, a day before or maybe the day of its Sundance premiere. And basically, Steve James lives in Oak Park. And he and his camera crew had access to a year at Oak Park and River Forest High School. And they followed a group of a dozen students, through their day-to-day lives, largely looking at racial disparities in what is seen as a largely diverse school and diverse community, but exploring the testing gap between white students and African American students, delving into all manner of disparities involving how people are living their lives and how it then impacts their schooling and how teachers attempt to bridge these gaps. It's a really fascinating, really, really meaty look at important issues. And then it's also just a really, really good high school drama where these kids just are going through high school things. So they're falling in love. They're trying to make sports teams. They're trying to rebel a little bit against their parents, against their teachers, etc. And so it's also sweet and it's also funny and it's just purely entertaining at times. And then you get these really long school board meetings where people are debating test scores and debating different teaching methods. And you go, okay, well, that's substantive stuff. The 5 episodes that I've seen out of the 10 of the series are really good, and I would expect, barring a big drop off of quality, that this one will be in my top 10 at the end of the year.
That's great.
In all likelihood.
That is great to hear. Are the episodes an hour each?
An hour or even slightly more in a couple of cases. There's a lot of material here.
Yeah.
And it probably could have been a 20 or 30 hour series, and maybe it's just as well that someone said, 10 will do, Steve.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's known for coverage.
Yes, he is.
He shoots a lot of stuff. There's just no question about it. Before we get to some of the indie episodic stuff, that is now being shown at Sundance, what's the sort of definition of what that is? And then this is the first year they've done it, correct?
It is the first year they've done it, and I think it's probably a work in progress in terms of defining what the difference is between indie episodic and, in some cases, just a short film. And I think probably they didn't necessarily in all cases do the best versions of how things are different. I would say that of the 15, 16, 20 episodic things that I saw, at least 3 or 4 of them realistically are probably short films and could just as easily have been in a short program at Sundance. But this is the first time they did it, and they were trying to distinguish. And also they were trying to distinguish between what they were doing with this section and what a lot of film festivals have been doing in recent years, which is simply doing premieres of established television shows on established television networks. South by Southwest in March is going to have a half dozen large television premieres, and they might say that they're semi-indie or that they fit a certain ethos of the festival, but at the end of the day, they're established television shows, whereas what they had at Sundance in the indie episodic section, there were a couple things that have digital platforms that they already air on. One is on a Warner Brothers digital platform. One is on Sundance Now, which is Sundance TV's digital platform.
Right.
Lots of interesting stuff, but that's about as mainstream as these get.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting approach. I don't know if it was necessarily a mainstream enough approach to actually get people into the Sundance theaters for it, because Sundance is all about the big premieres and big events, and I don't know that a lot of these really were, if the biggest names associated with them were Matthew Lillard and a couple other semi-recognizable names.
Not
that Matthew Lillard is semi-recognizable, but still.
Yeah. Okay, well, Dan, hang on a second, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and he joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we got to take a break here for the news. When we come back, more TV talk right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's everybody doing this morning? It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your request in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up after 3:30, Nancy Gomez is going to join us. She's an executive director for Project Onward, an incredible organization. We'll tell you all about it and about a fundraiser that's happening that you can go to as well. We're going to talk about leading into Super Bowl Sunday. We're going to talk about our favorite football movies. And the jet is on the way. Skip Lee is coming. And we will have another edition of Pop-Up Video. Right now, Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. He just got back from 24 days of craziness between the TCA Tour and Sundance, and is having us catch up on some of the stuff that he saw in both places. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Do you have anything, the indie episodic program, which you just described for us before the news, at Sundance, what were the standouts for you? What were some of the things that you really thought were pretty good?
Well, some of the things that people can actually look for soon.
Yeah.
Sundance Now, as I mentioned, is the Sundance digital platform, and they have a half-hour series called This Close, which is kind of not exactly a rom-com. It's a buddy series co-created by Shoshana Stern, who some people will remember as the deaf actress from the first season of Weeds, and also from the first season of Jericho. And so it's about these two friends who are deaf and basically their life. And the large portions of it are done in ASL, of course, with subtitles. And it feels different from anything that you've necessarily seen on TV. And Shoshana Stern in particular is just a really good actress who, under normal circumstances, Hollywood apparently has not taken any effort to attempt to utilize properly. And so here she and a friend wrote a series so that they could both get to act and have an actual good part. And it's good to see things like that happen. She's really good. The series itself is very likable, and it's premiering on February 14th, again on Sundance Now. That one at Sundance was paired with The Mortified Guide, and that's part of an ongoing stage and podcast and other things series. Basically, the gimmick of it is people read their journals from adolescence out loud in front of crowds.
Yeah, you know, Dan, I've had the Mortified people. I've been friends with the Mortified people here in Chicago, and I've had them on the show. They've done many live performances here, and I just love Mortified. I just think it's fantastic.
It's such a good basic formula, and not at all surprisingly, it works perfectly on TV. There would be no reason at all why this formula that had worked as a stage show, as a podcast, as a movie, would not work as a TV show.
Yeah.
It works perfectly as a TV show. So if you've liked it in any of its other forms, I assure you, you will like it in its TV form. And there are six episodes of it that are going to be premiering on Netflix also on February 14th.
That's on Netflix then. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's not a Netflix original per se, but it will be one of those shows that magically pops up on Netflix.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, it's cringeworthy, it's awkward, it's charming, it's just entertaining, and it's so much a format that could be absolutely anything, and so it's this as easily as anything else. Let's see, what else? There was Halfway There, which was the series that I mentioned, stars Matthew Lillard. It also features Blythe Danner, Isai Morales. It's from the director of the Isai Morales and Sean Penn Bad Boys.
Wow, Rick Rosenthal. Rick Rosenthal is working again.
He is indeed. I believe his daughter has a part in the show, and I think I'm guessing it's his son who's the cinematographer.
Wow.
So yes, it is Rick Rosenthal out there now embodying indie TV.
I'm glad, by the way, that you said Bad Boys and not Halloween 2.
he has a very, very varied. I mean, he also directed the Life Goes On pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And has directed hundreds of hours of variable quality television
in
the past 15 to 20 years. So the guy's got a heck of a career, which explains why he was able to get a lot of fairly recognizable actors to come do this pilot for probably very little money and with no real reason to expect that it's going to air anywhere. It's about basically a halfway house in Hollywood, sort of a sobriety facility between rehab and the real world. And it's decent. It feels close enough to like what you might see on ABC or maybe FX. I think probably it's the kind of thing where if it had been made in normal pilot season for an actual network, it just wouldn't have gotten picked up because it's okay, but maybe not grabby and hooky, but it's interesting. And so I think they were trying to show a lot of different versions of what indie episodic can mean. And so that's kind of a conventional thing that shows that, you know, you can just do normal TV. But then there was also this utterly absurd, gross, weird thing called Tropical Cocktails, which was from the director of The Greasy Strangler, which played at Sundance last year.
Oh, God.
And it's verging on unwatchable, but in the moments where it's watchable, it's verging on sort of absurdist brilliance. And I don't know if the 3 or 4 minutes that are like that are worth the rest of it. But again, the point was to show that there are lots of people making episodic TV without a TV place for it to be. And that's sort of the only prerequisite, is that it gives the idea that it's an ongoing story. But as I said already, there were a lot of cases in which basically these were 25 or 22 minute short films. And yeah, it was a lot of interesting stuff to watch, just because it puts everything that I watch on a daily basis in kind of a different context. And I think that's what its goal was. And for me, it mostly worked in that respect.
And was the response to it generally positive? I mean, the entire program?
I would say that the response was probably a little muted. I think that there were a lot of empty seats in a lot of the programs I was at. And I think that if I were giving the Sundance people advice, I would tell them to try to come up with two or three somewhat bigger, hookier things as a lure for everything else. You know, they can and should do the smaller stuff that they concentrated on this year. You just have to give people something to get in the door for, something to talk about, so that they talk about all the other stuff around it. And I think they were trying to concentrate so hard on small and distinctive, but not already destined for a big home, that they maybe didn't think of what was going to get people in the door. And I hope they will continue to do it, because it's a good idea. It just needs refinement.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. And let's talk a little bit about some of the TV stuff that that people can check out right now. Like, for instance, the Waco miniseries about the whole thing that happened in Waco with David Koresh, which was it over 20 years ago, right? It's like 20...
I believe we're looking at...
94?
I feel like this is clearly an anniversary, which is why all these things are coming. I feel like it was probably 93. It had to have been,
yeah.
Because that would be why we would be doing all of these. Because there's also this. There's at least one of the high in your cable listings documentary type channels is doing a 2-hour The Truth About Waco documentary or something. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
This year.
So yeah, I think it was 93.
One of them.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us about the Paramount Network. I mean, it's got a pretty great cast.
It does, and that's pretty much what it has going for it. Basically, the Paramount Network, for people who haven't been paying attention to things changing on their dial, is what used to be Spike TV. Basically, Spike TV looked at what its audience was and realized that in 10-plus years of programming, they hadn't really had a hit doing what they were supposed to be doing, which was men only, and basically they looked at the ratings for something like Lip Sync Battle. They looked at the ratings for something like Bar Rescue, and they said, oh, we could actually just do shows that go down the middle. And so thus they rebranded without the stink of Spike TV, and now they are Paramount Network.
Now, does that mean no more Taffer screaming at people?
I don't think it necessarily means anything involving whatever your favorite like TV programs are. I think it just means a kind of different ethos going forward.
Got it. Okay.
I would say.
Okay.
So starting with Waco, which does indeed have a really insanely good cast. Starting with Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights. Speaking of, if you guys are going to be talking about the best football movie,
yep.
Just talk about Friday Night Lights. don't worry about the movies. Just talk about Friday Night Lights.
I'm with you.
Okay, because otherwise you're like stretching and reaching to make it seem like Remember the Titans is a good movie, and it's not a good movie.
The one that tops my list is North Dallas 40. That's my favorite.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the first Longest Yard is
It's great.
It's a gritty, macho kind of certain kind of 70s movie. I think it gets away with it, but then you start really reaching.
And
so yes, Brian's song will make people cry, but even it's a TV movie. So
right.
Anyway,
okay. We're going to jump into that a little bit later.
Yes, Taylor Kitsch as David Koresh. You've got Michael Shannon as a hostage negotiator.
I think Michael Shannon needs to work more. What the hell? He's in everything. My God.
He's in everything, and I'm not sure that I feel like he's necessarily all that discriminant at all times.
Yeah.
And so maybe, I don't know, protect your brand a little bit better, Michael Shannon. But then again, the cast here is so good. You've got Rory Culkin, who's at least one of everyone's top three Culkins. I would even say these days top two. Macaulay just doesn't work that much.
Right,
so what
right.
are you going to say? You got John Leguizamo as either an ATF or an FBI agent. You kind of lose track at a certain point. Melissa Benoist, Supergirl, is there as one of David Koresh's wives. Speaking of people who's in absolutely everything, Andrea Riseborough is there as another one of David Koresh's wives. She's in absolutely everything. I think she was in three or four movies showing at Sundance. And I feel like 98% of Americans couldn't identify her, maybe 99%.
Yeah.
And then just all sorts of other people popping up. Paul Sparks, who people will remember from Boardwalk Empire. Shea Whigham, also from Boardwalk Empire. Julia Garner from The Americans and Ozark. Great cast. Nobody is bad. The focus of the miniseries is a little bit problematic to me. Like I understand that we've sort of gotten past what the news reports were at the time, which were horrible, horrible things are happening in this compound, and thereby the FBI actions were justified, and blah blah blah. I think there's enough historical distance that most people accept that this was a preventable tragedy, and a true tragedy that did not need to be this thing that it was. The miniseries, though, comes really, really close to idolizing David Koresh in a way that makes me uncomfortable. Like, it doesn't treat him as the Messiah, but it really treats him as this earnest believing guy, and everyone believes earnestly, and they all just wanted to live in peace and harmony and, prophesize about the apocalypse. And then the FBI came and did horrible things to these innocent people who weren't doing anything wrong in any way, shape, or form. Mm. And it's really confusing to me, because there are things that it does acknowledge that he's doing that the miniseries doesn't treat as bad. Like, for example, statutory rape and marrying 12-year-old girls and impregnating them. That seems like a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like a bad thing in the context of the miniseries. It treats it as a totally normal, largely non-judgmental thing, and I found a lot of that to be really icky, and the more icky than I needed given the performances.
Yeah.
The performances can only do so much to cover for the ickiness.
Right, gotcha. Okay. Dan, hang on.
Of course.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're talking TV. He joins us every couple of weeks. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV talk right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and it's a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. And Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we got more TV stuff to talk about. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
I wanted to get your thoughts. It's a film and not TV, but it involves TV. I wanted to get your thoughts on Won't You Be My Neighbor, which is the documentary about Mr. Rogers. My friend Eric Childress, who covers the Sundance Film Festival for us every year, gave it a very positive review. Where do you stand on it?
I liked it a lot. It was one of the movies that I saw before the Indie Episodic Program started. I basically was on the documentary reviewing beat before the Indie Episodic Program started because I wanted to make myself useful.
Yeah.
That's what I go for. It's from Morgan Neville, who did 20 Feet from Stardom and won an Oscar for that. And it's one of the rare documentaries that actually comes into Sundance with a studio attached. I believe it's Focus Features, and with a release date. It's going to come out this summer. And basically, this is the rare documentary where people actually can see dollar signs when they look at it. And so, yay, because the marketplace needs movies like that.
Yeah.
And it is it's just such a warm look at Fred Rogers and at the ethos of Fred Rogers, at the message of Fred Rogers, at how it was crafted, at what his background was. So it's about Fred Rogers as a minister. It's about Fred Rogers' ideology. It's about Fred Rogers as a man who largely hated television and hated the direction of television in the moment that he started working in it and said, okay, here's something TV can do better, and then kept trying to do that even as television kept getting more and more television-y. And so it's just all of these wonderful little moments, and it's dominated largely by footage from the show and footage from interviews of Fred Rogers. There's interviews with his widow and interviews with his two sons, and there's that, and a few of the cast members who talk regularly are there. But this is not a documentary if you're looking for people to talk, you know, famous people talking about how he changed their lives. There are no outside celebrities talking about anything. And none of the celebrities who popped up periodically on the show are really there other than Yo-Yo Ma, for example. And his son produced it, so there's a reason for that. But it just, you sit there the entire time going, wow, I can't believe that this was something that was on TV, that was on TV for children, that taught children these values. And you sit there and you go, wow, I can't believe that Fox News has made their mission in recent years to talk about how Mr. Rogers ruined a generation of people, because all you can do is think, my God, if only everybody were raised with these values, how on earth could that possibly be a bad thing? And so you sit there the entire time right on the verge of tears if you were someone who grew up on Mr. Rogers, because I just sat there the whole time going, wow, I vaguely remember that. Wow, there was a memory that I just unearthed from that I haven't thought of in 30 years. I described it in my review really as a documentary that you want to hug. And I think that's where I came away from it. I don't think it's some grand artistic achievement. I don't think it's some complicated piece of montage and construction and whatever. I think it's just a sturdy, well-made delivery of a message about a figure who, you know, was probably too good for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited to see it. I'm really looking forward to it. And then, of course, just a couple of days ago, they announced that Tom Hanks is going to play him.
And why the heck not?
Yeah.
If you're gonna cast the most decent figure on American television in the past 50 years, might as well cast a paragon of decency to play him. And I suspect Tom Hanks will do a fine job in the role.
I agree. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Okay. Won't You Be My Neighbor, by the way, is going to get a theatrical release, and we'll see it in the summer. And that's something to look forward to. That's great. Okay. TV review here. Fox has a new medical drama called The Resident. What did you think of that?
I would describe it as being for people who are desperate for medical procedures and the procedurals, not procedures.
Right,
that would be something
right.
Different. You know, like if you need if you need to have your appendix removed, don't watch The Resident. Go to a hospital.
Right, right.
But if you are the kind of viewer who, well, and honestly, if you're a viewer who's starved for medical procedurals, you could probably just watch the entire series run of ER, which just popped up on Hulu, and you'd be far better off. It's a large chunk of medical cliches and mumbo jumbo, you know, geniuses being antisocial and making magical diagnoses and all of that. It just happens to have a really good cast that makes you kind of want to give it more attention and effort than the actual show itself deserves. So the cast features Bruce Greenwood, Matt Zuckery from Gilmore Girls and The Good Wife, Emily Van Camp from Everwood and Revenge. It's just a really, really good cast, and they're given very little to do. Yeah. I think I actively hated the first episode. The second episode was conspicuously average, but not in any way above average, and that's probably all that I need to watch. There's just too much good TV.
I just can't get past Logan. That's just an issue I have.
And that's the thing. If you're a fan of Matt Zuckery from Gilmore Girls and from Good Wife, then this would be a fine show for you to watch him being him. But if you are not a fan of his, this will not make you reevaluate your feelings.
I wouldn't think so. Okay. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a break here for the news. When we come back, we got more TV to talk about with Dan. And then we'll talk a little bit about what he's caught up on as well, because, you know, his DVR has so much stuff on it that smoke is pouring out of it at this point. So we're going to find out how he's managing that. That's all coming up right after we take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 at the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We've got coming up after the 3:30 news, Nancy Gomez, executive director for Project Onward, is going to join us to tell us all about that organization and this really cool fundraiser that you should check out. We'll get into that a little bit later on. We're going to talk about great football movies leading into the Super Bowl weekend here. And the jet is coming in, and Skip Skipley will be here, and another pop-up video will be happening as well. So that's all coming up right here. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Dan Feinberg is my guest. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
All right. So, what have you caught up on? Let's talk a little bit about what you've maybe caught up on a little bit.
Okay. Let's see. First thing I've caught up on, and I know you're caught up on this, and it's good stuff. I am caught up on The Good Place. That was the first thing I caught up on.
It's so good. That show is so good, man. Oh man. Yeah. I'll be watching that when I get home in the morning. No, that's on tomorrow night. It's on tonight, Thursday. Yes. Right? Yeah. Okay. So I'll be watching it Friday morning. So
I was going to say because I haven't watched this week's episode, and if I've suddenly fallen behind on it again, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. So no, we're all set. I got a little. I got a little confused for a second, but yeah, no. So okay, great. So you're all caught up on The Good Place. Yep.
I'm in fact caught up on all of my NBC comedy. So I am caught up on Great News, which may be done forever, sadly, or not sadly, depending on how you felt about it.
I'm not crazy about it.
No, it is, again, not essential, but sometimes good. Let's see, caught up on Superstore, which I continue to insist that people should give a shot to. It's an above average show. Mm-hmm. Let's see, I am caught up on Basket. So how have you felt about the season's first two episodes of Basket?
Love it. Absolutely love it. You know, the first episode, oh God, I mean, because Louis Anderson Christine just breaks my heart. And the whole sewing of the dress and all that, I'm just so excited to be on the local TV. Just beautiful stuff. And I like how Chip is kind of emerging this season as like the hero of the piece, whereas like in the first season, now I mean this is season three, but in the first season he was clearly just kind of just one weirdo and kind of a jerk amongst a group of people. But he really is becoming like this kind of hero this season, which I think is kind of funny and interesting.
I have also thought that Martha has been spectacular in the first two episodes of the season.
The second episode is all hers. Episode two was she dominated that, and she's so good and just so great on the show. I mean, it's just a great character as well.
Like the first episode, I don't know that I found it all that funny, except for her. The second episode for me, I thought was much better, and I thought it was much better in large part because of how much Martha Kelly it was. I thought that was just a great episode for her.
I agree.
Learning about Martha's love life was valuable and valid. I was glad to have that time.
And I really hope people are watching it. We've talked about it, you know, for all three seasons that it's been on. We've been a champion of the show. It's Baskets. It's on FX. And it's just great. It's absolutely great.
Let's see. What else am I caught up on? I am caught up now on Top Chef. I don't know why that was something I prioritized, but I did. So who are you rooting for?
I like Fatima. I don't know necessarily that, you know, she's the best chef, but I think she's adorable and I really like her a lot. But I guess I'm rooting for Bruce. I'm in Bruce's camp, so.
But he's too experienced. What's even the point?
Right.
He's a pro. Everyone worships him.
Yeah.
You know, he's got 17 restaurants, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think definitely Fatima is the one who I'm rooting for. I don't know. Like you, I don't know if I necessarily have any evidence at all that she's the best chef there. But her personality is so appealing, and she is so funny, and her reaction to the entire challenge that made them go out and camp in the snow, which seemed like an utter nightmare, was so good, and her reaction was all of our reactions, I would like to believe. That was just a weird task that they asked them to do, and particularly with the newly pregnant woman joining the game and then dumping her in the middle of...
I know. It was crazy.
And then she couldn't stay around because, good God, you're not supposed to do that to people. That was not a good thing to do. That was a bad strategy from Top Chef. But I felt like this has been an okay season so far. And
it's been fun. I like Fatima a lot. She's really terrific. And I don't know if you know this or not, Dan, but she's got cancer now, Fatima.
Does she?
Yeah. They posted it on the Top Chef page that because Padma went to visit her in the hospital, and there's photos of her in the hospital with Padma. And obviously they shoot this stuff months ahead. But I'm wishing the best for Fatima and a quick recovery.
Okay, yes. Now, as am I. When I tweeted that I was rooting for her, told me not to Google her because I would find out spoilers. I assume that's probably.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not a plot point on the show.
No, it's not. It's not. It's just like, you know, I want to send good thoughts. That's why I brought it up.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I join you. We are sending good vibes through the radio ether. So
yeah, exactly.
Happy to do that. And rooting for her in general. So that's something I'm caught
up on. By the way, I really thought she was going home last week. For Restaurant Wars, I really thought oh man, that's it, she's gone. But they got rid of the right person, Claudette. Is she historically the first person to be kicked off Top Chef twice?
She's definitely not, because there have been, of course, all the
The returning people. Yeah, I just thought a newbie in one season. I don't think anybody's ever been kicked off as a newbie, you know, twice.
I feel like there has to have been, but I can't. But not going to go encyclopedic on it. She could have gone 3 weeks in a row.
Oh yeah,
came back in. She was just, and then she still had the nerve.
I know.
To get indignant.
I know. Okay, let's move on. She makes me she aggravates me. Okay.
No, I agree. And I think that I'm caught up on Big Bang Theory. That's not going to be meaningful to anyone. Basically, what happens is it's just so much easier to catch up on half hour stuff.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I'll sit down and I'll watch four episodes in a stretch of a half hour show. And usually I'll just watch it on Hulu because I have ad free Hulu and I don't even need to worry about fast forwarding through the commercials on my DVR. So that tends to be what I get caught up on. And all these dramas just start piling up on my DVR, and it's horrible. I'm 4 weeks behind on every single one of them, and it's a daunting prospect.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Are you watching One Day at a Time, season two?
I just haven't had the chance to start it yet,
yeah.
So it's right there. But the problem becomes, do I want to watch something I know I'm going to enjoy that does absolutely nothing to clear off my DVR?
Right.
And so would I enjoy watching the new season of One Day at a Time more than 90% of what's on my DVR right now? Of course I would.
Yeah.
It's just accomplishes nothing in the purely physical task of deleting stuff from my DVR.
I gotcha.
How much have you watched and how is it?
I'm about 5 episodes in and it's great. And we had we had Tobolowsky on last week, and he told some fantastic stories about season two and the making of and all kinds of really cool stuff. He also told an unbelievably hilarious story about the couple of episodes that he spent in a Speedo in White Famous. he told a story about how he had to pick out what to stuff in his Speedo to make it look like he was well endowed. And there was he had to choose, as he said, from a bunch of peni to put in his shorts because his character was supposed to be really well endowed. And only Stephen Tobolowsky could tell the story and get away with it. It was really funny. So
sure, and all of that for a show that was canceled after one season. Not,
yeah, we talked about that. We talked about that, and it was, you know, I mean, the current climate in Hollywood with all the, you know, the Harvey Weinstein stuff and what that show entailed, it was about Hollywood and there was a lot of weird sex stuff in it. So I think that's one of the reasons why they were so quick to cancel it. At least that's what Tobo said. So,
you know, I'm sure that was part of the reason.
Yeah.
I think there were probably other reasons, some as basic as people weren't really watching it and talking about it.
Yeah, that's true. Let me ask you this. We're talking Netflix here. We were talking about One Day at a Time. This isn't a TV show, but did you see A Futile and Stupid Gesture?
I did not see it when it premiered at Sundance, and thus far I have not been able to get to it. Are you in the pro or con camp? Because, boy, have I heard wildly divergent reviews of it.
I'm in the pro camp.
Okay.
Mostly for the performances. Especially, I think Will Forte is great as Doug Kenny. I happen to geek out about this stuff because, like, this is, you know, this is what began my sensibility of comedy was that. And, you know, going into SNL and all those films, they were very seminal for me in terms of, you know, what my comedy is. And so I'm kind of a historical geek about that, and they get a lot wrong in terms of, like, historical accuracy. But the spirit is there. The spirit of National Lampoon is there. I think many of the performances are great. Thomas Lennon is amazing as O'Donohue. He's unbelievable. And the two main performances are great. Donald Gleason plays Beard, and Will Forte is great. Overall, I liked it. I didn't love it. I would recommend the documentary about the Lampoon over this movie, but it's not bad. And it's
which I saw at Sundance 3 years ago, I guess. Drunk, Stoned,
yeah.
Brilliant, Dead.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed it, and, you know, thought it was good. And I assume that the movie had its Sundance premiere because of the documentary having a Sundance premiere a few years earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get to it eventually, but I feel like that's probably going to come after my DVR clearing and after One Day at a Time. And also, guess what? Things just keep on coming. And
yeah.
So I've heard good things about Altered Carbon, which is Netflix,
right.
And premieres on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't watched a second of that because my colleague Tim is going to have reviewed it. And so one of these days, there's just too much stuff, Nick. It's hard to get out of a hole once you get in it.
Well, here's a new one that I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if you got the chance. Have they sent you anything about AP Bio?
Yes, I have seen the first 4 episodes.
Oh, okay.
Of AP Bio.
Tell everybody what that is, and I'm really looking forward to it. I hope it's good.
It's created by Mike O'Brien, who had one season as an on-camera presence at SNL, but was a writer on the show for about a decade. And it's executive produced by Lorne Michaels and by Seth Meyers and a few other people. It stars Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny, if you've been wondering why there isn't a new season of Always Sunny premiering this month. That's part of the reason. And he plays a former college philosophy professor who, through some disgraceful situation, is no longer employed as a college philosophy professor and somehow ends up as an AP bio teacher at a public school in Ohio. And he's not a very good teacher. You would say he was a bad teacher, but there was already a movie and a TV show called Bad Teacher. Instead, it's called something else. But if you've seen a TV show or a movie about a bad teacher who learns a lot from the students that he's teaching, this is a little bit like that. It kind of plays against that by having him immediately announce that he isn't going to end up teaching them about biology by accident and that he's not going to learn more from them than they learn from him, blah, blah, blah. It's got so many things going for it. It's only very, very limitedly funny through the four episodes I've seen. The elements are all there. Glenn Howerton is perfectly cast. Patton Oswalt plays the principal at the school. He's a little bit wishy-washy, a little bit officious. You know, he's perfectly cast. And as things go along, the kids in the class also begin to be reasonably well delineated. And so at a certain point, it's the kind of show where it could basically click into whatever the next gear is and become really funny. Through four episodes, the laughter is, I would say, decidedly scattered.
Oh, that's too
and
bad.
So it's about a matter of patience. You know, you have to go, okay, I believe that eventually this is going to lock in. Through four episodes, it has not yet locked in,
okay.
At least not for me.
All right. It's on my DVR, so I'll get to it. Well, Dan, good luck getting through the DVR. and I thank you for...
Just got to trust the process, Nick. Trust the process.
No. If I trust anybody's process, it's yours, Dan. So there
I
you go.
That.
All right, and you can read Dan at Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print FIEN. Dan, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Till the next time, Nick.
Take care, buddy. Dan Feinberg, desperately trying to get through his DVR. Let's wish him luck, everybody. All right, we'll take a break right here on 720 WGN. We'll be back after this.